There's resume workshops. They can do interviewing skills. If it's more vocational training that they need.
Unemployment benefits end for thousands of Alaskans. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, December 27th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the frustrating work of federal appropriations.
Our bill hasn't made it to the floor for consideration since I've been ranking member.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
About 6,500 Alaskans will see their emergency unemployment benefits come to an end tomorrow. The federal program was enacted by Congress in 2008 at the beginning of the recession, which is still affecting the economy in certain states. As KTOO's Casey Kelly reports, an effort to reauthorize the program is expected early next year.
Congress has passed nearly a dozen bills extending the Emergency Unemployment Compensation Program in the past 5.5 years. The idea was to provide an additional safety net for the long-term unemployed beyond the 26 weeks of regular state unemployment benefits.
Tiers were added to it to allow more benefits, and then it reduced.
Bill Kramer is chief of unemployment insurance for the state of Alaska, which administers both the state and federal unemployment compensation programs. He says people who qualify for emergency unemployment can apply to receive benefits for this week, but that will be it. In the past, when Congress allowed the program to lapse, the state was able to continue paying existing claims with money from the Emergency Unemployment Compensation Fund. This time around, Kramer says that funding has not been renewed.
The way Congress did this particular program, December 28th is the end of the program. So even if an individual, you know, just established emergency unemployment claim with us last week and they may have many weeks of benefits in their balance, we can only pay through this week.
Alaska Senator Mark Begich, a Democrat, says the program should have been extended as part of the recent budget deal in Washington, D.C. Now he'll work to renew it when Congress reconvenes in January.
There's no question the economy is growing, but there's certain areas of the country that are still hurting, as well as in our own state.
The national unemployment rate was 5.6% when the program started. It topped out at 10% in October 2009 and now is down to 7%. Begich says any bill reauthorizing emergency benefits will have to overcome a filibuster from Republicans, some of whom, he says, are philosophically opposed to unemployment insurance.
I don't get it. They complain the economy hasn't rebounded, but then they don't want to help with unemployment extension. And then when people like myself say, well, the economy is getting better, they say, well, it's really not as good as it could be. So it's like, you know, there's a lot of doublespeak that goes on in Washington from some of these guys that have been there way too long, and this is one of them.
Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski says she's open to extending the Emergency Unemployment Compensation Program, but wants to review a 3-month extension proposed by Rhode Island Democrat Jack Reed and Nevada Republican Dean Heller.
We recognize that the unemployment numbers are coming down. Alaska, we're just a little bit below the national average, but in places like Nevada and Rhode Island, where the two sponsors are from, unemployment is well over 9%.
Both Murkowski and Begich say the emergency program should not last forever. Republican Alaska Congressman Don Young said via email that an extension would cost $25.2 billion over the course of a year, which should require offsetting budget cuts. State Unemployment Insurance Chief Bill Kramer says the Alaska Department of Labor is encouraging people whose benefits are about to expire to take advantage of the state's network of 22 job centers, as well as online employment services.
There's resume workshops. They can do interviewing skills, depending on certain criteria. If it's more vocational training that they need in order to bring their skills to something where they can be more employable, they might be able to help that way. There's just a whole host of services available to try and help people get back to work.
Kramer says the job centers can help individuals over the phone as well. Alaska's unemployment rate was 6.5% in November, the 61st straight month below the national average. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
It's quiet in the U.S. Capitol these days, but the pressure is on one group of lawmakers, the appropriators. Among them, Alaska's two senators, Lisa Murkowski and Mark Begich. They have until January 15th to complete a dozen spending bills. If they don't, we could see another government shutdown, or less drastically, a type of budget purgatory Congress has been resorting to called a continuing resolution. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports from Washington.
A seat on the Senate Appropriations Committee used to be quite a lofty perch. The late Ted Stevens became one of the most powerful Alaskans to ever live by becoming chairman of that panel. It allowed him to send billions home in earmarks. Now, both Alaska senators are on the committee, but it hasn't amounted to much. Congress has been too divided in recent years to let the appropriators do their work, and anyway, it banned earmarks due to public outrage. Outrage that was partially inspired by Alaska projects. Alaska Congressman Don Young says it's been a blow to the state.
They're both on, but what can they do? They can't really do it. And without earmarks, they don't have the clout that we used to have. This is the reality of life. We are being totally, I think, ignored.
Young says when Congress won't exercise its full power of the purse, it's ceding power to the executive branch. Earmarking or slipping special home state projects into a spending bill, usually late in the process, did help lawmakers pass appropriation bills in years past, but critics say it wasn't right that a few powerful lawmakers could direct money so specifically and with so little scrutiny. Senator Murkowski says the recent stalemate has been frustrating. She's the top-ranking Republican on the subcommittee that writes the spending bill for the Interior Department.
But our bill hasn't made it to the floor for consideration since I've been ranking member, because we're not moving those appropriations bills forward.
She hopes we're now seeing a return to the normal process. Congress this month did finally pass a budget resolution, which is kind of the starting gun for appropriations. Here's how it's supposed to work. The president submits a thick budget to Congress in February. It's non-binding, just a request, really. In April, lawmakers are supposed to pass a budget resolution, a blueprint saying how much they want to spend and how they'll pay for it. Then the appropriations committees can get going. Committee leaders divide the money pie among 12 subcommittees, each of which crafts a spending bill. When they're all passed, they fund government for a year. But bitter divisions have derailed the process in recent years. Instead of detailed appropriations bills, lawmakers pass continuing resolutions to just keep the money flowing, usually at the prior year's level. A Government Accountability Office report says it's a wasteful process. Agencies are paralyzed by uncertainty, then get all their money late in the year and are in a rush to use it. Senator Mark Begich says spending becomes a blunt instrument without appropriations, a process that gives him and Murkowski a chance to shape the bill to meet Alaskan needs.
We were continuing programs through these crazy things called continuing resolutions that did not need to be funded anymore, but we were funding them because that was the format. Now we can appropriate strategically and surgically, remove programs that are no longer efficient, not necessary anymore, and do the right kind of budget balancing that's critical, and that's where the appropriators come in.
So the members and staff of the Appropriations Committee are racing the clock. To move things faster, they'll likely roll all the bills into a big package called an omnibus. If it's not signed into law by January 15, they'll have to pass another continuing resolution. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Interior low temperatures dipped into the 50 below range again today as a cold snap that began Monday deepened across the interior. Among the coldest readings this morning were minus 55 at Eagle and 54 below at Fort Yukon. A strong inversion has kept hilltop temperatures in the 10 to 15 below range while sinking the deepest cold into valleys. The Fairbanks Bowl has also suffered from accumulated emissions. Fairbanks North Star Borough air quality technician Jim McCormick says the cold, still conditions have resulted in elevated fine particulate pollution levels, including a peak reading on Christmas Eve in North Pole. National Weather Service meteorologist Jim Brader says the cold air mass that settled over the region at the start of the week is on the verge of giving way to a more active, warmer pattern. Brader says as the cold air is pushed out, winds are picking up in some locations.
Near Delta Junction and the hilltops around Fairbanks, and we're talking like the summits, like Cleary Summit, are starting to see pretty significant winds. So even though those areas have warmed up, the wind chills in those areas are in the 40 to 55 below range. And we expect that those wind chills to continue into tomorrow morning.
Brader says rising temperatures and snow are expected in the Fairbanks area by late tomorrow. He says temperatures in the normal range between 0 and 15 below are forecast into early next week. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, cutting your hair for a cause.
I'm going to shave all my hair off. She was one of my favorite teachers here in KLA. I hope she gets better soon.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com.
Overfishing charges against former State Senator Albert Kukesh and two other men have been reinstated by the Alaska Court of Appeals. In 2009, Kukesh and three others were fishing for sockeye salmon near his hometown of Angoon. A state wildlife trooper observed them catching more salmon than allowed under their subsistence permits and issued citations. Kukesh and two of the men challenged, saying the Alaska Department of Fish and Game cannot establish catch limits. They argued the only way to enact limits is through the Alaska Board of Fisheries. A district court judge agreed and dismissed the charges against the men. The Court of Appeals, in a ruling today, said the Board of Fish can delegate authority to the department. The case was returned to the district court. Kukesh says he and other defendants would like to continue fighting, but their attorney, Tony Strong of Juneau, has been disbarred for an unrelated matter.
We have to find another one. We have to find people like AFN or Quinkenhyde or somebody else to step up with us. To me, it's an important question. To other people, it may not be, but I think the Native community sees this as a question that we have to take to the courts to have the state of Alaska recognize that we have a concern here.
While the case hinged on the narrow issue of who can set catch limits, Kukesh says the men are really challenging the state's overall subsistence policy.
We appealed a bag limit of 15 fish per family per year in Angoon. 15 fish per family per year. And that's what we appealed on, because less than 2 or 3 miles away, we had seine boats getting thousands and thousands of fish intended for that area, sockeye bycatch there. Nobody cited them.
Kukesh says Fish and Game did not get input from Angoon residents before enacting the catch limit. Mike Mitchell, an attorney with the Alaska Department of Law, says the state is pleased with the appeals court's decision. He says it affirms a longstanding form of fishery regulation and bolsters the ability of Fish and Game and the Board of Fisheries to manage and conserve salmon for all user groups. Kukesh, a Democrat, served 8 years in the Alaska House of Representatives, followed by 8 years in the state Senate, representing a largely rural district. He lost his seat in 2012 after the state redistricting board put him in the same district as Sitka Republican Bert Stedman. Human skeletal remains discovered in KCAW's basement in 2011 in Sitka were removed from the cable house a week ago today. The bones were identified as Alaska Native and are now in the custody of the Sitka Tribe of Alaska. KCAW's Emily Foreman has the story.
The human remains were initially found by construction workers in the midst of structural improvements to the historic Cable House, home of Raven Radio, in October of 2011. New information revealed that the bones are Native Alaskan, likely Southeast in origin. The bones remained in the basement, undisturbed, until Friday. That was when they were exhumed from the Cable House basement and turned over to the Sitka Tribe of Alaska. Brian Kemp, an assistant professor at Washington State University, tested mitochondrial DNA in a tooth and identified the remains as Native American. He also screened DNA on sex chromosomes and found that the tooth had belonged to a female. Kemp said that given the data available, it is not possible to trace the bones to a specific population because the DNA sequence is widely common in Native American lineage. While the remains are believed to be old and likely predate the 103-year-old building that houses Raven Radio, Kemp does not know how old. He says radiocarbon dating is required to determine the age of these remains. Joan Dale, an archaeologist with the Alaska Heritage Resource Survey, inspected photographs of the remains. After considering the shape of a skull, Dale said they are most likely Southeast Alaska Native. Sitka Tribe of Alaska staff, with the assistance of Forest Service archaeologist Jay Kinsman, exhumed the bones. Overall, it was a well-coordinated effort between KCAW, the Sitka Tribe of Alaska, and the Forest Service. The Sitka Tribe of Alaska will determine a suitable location for interment of the remains. In Sitka, I'm Emily Foreman.
The Chena River is getting cleaner. The waterway that winds through the heart of Fairbanks had been plagued by oil and sediment from runoff. But as KUAC's Dan Bross reports, local efforts have turned things around.
After years of substandard water quality, in 2010, the Chena River came in line with a hydrocarbon pollution standard set to protect aquatic life. The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation reports that the latest test data provided by the Tanana Valley Watershed Association shows hydrocarbon levels remain under the pollution threshold, while sedimentation is also coming down. DEC Environmental Program Specialist Chandra McGee attributes the progress to water quality permit mandated public outreach.
The city did some surveys of residents in Fairbanks and the surrounding areas that found that most people didn't realize that everything that went straight into those storm drains also went directly to the river.
The public education is required by water permits issued to the City of Fairbanks, the North Star Borough, and local partner groups. The program includes outreach in schools in the spring when runoff peaks. McGee says other aspects of the effort to clean up the Chena are aimed at diverting runoff.
Designing your landscape differently so that things don't run off directly into those storm sewers, so that more water filters into the ground like it would naturally in a forest, as opposed to just running right off and picking up pollutants and going right into a storm drain.
McGee says spring street sweeping also helps limit sediments and other pollutants from running into the Chena River. She says the focus now is to maintain local awareness and other efforts to keep the river clean. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnick Arm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Mat-Su Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Lauren Rosenthal. This week on AK, buzz cut. Hair is important, especially in high school, but that didn't stop a few dozen students at Bethel's Kuskokwim Learning Academy boarding school from shaving off their hair in support of a teacher who has cancer. It was also a chance for some students to remember family members who died from the disease. From member station KYUK, Angela Denning Barnes has the story.
In a corner room at the school, two classroom chairs are doubling as makeshift barber chairs. More than a dozen students stand in line waiting for their turn in the seat.
I think you could just shave it off.
Brenda Woods is all smiles. At 16, she has a pretty round face and a full head of thick, dark hair. She says it's all coming off in support of Connie Sankwich, a teacher who has stage 2 ovarian cancer.
I was thinking about it for a couple of days, but I thought that I'd just cut it short. But after I watched those other guys' hair get shaved, I thought that I should do the same because the short hair doesn't look like it's very supportive to the people of cancer, in my opinion.
It's a lot of hair to go through, too.
StanCorp dutifully buzzes away. He's run a barbershop in Bethel for over 20 years and is volunteering his services at the school.
I'm Doug Boyer. I'm the principal here at Akuska-Quim Learning Academy.
Boyer is tall, towering over his students as he also waits for his turn in the chair. He says Sankwich is a beloved teacher who taught a character-building class.
The main concept of the program is that a small act of kindness will start a chain reaction of kindness. The students now wanted to come back, and that chain reaction has started to blossom, and now they wanted to show their respect to her.
Most of the students are Yupik Eskimo. Some are from Bethel, others from nearby villages. Vanessa Igwak is a 19-year-old from Bethel. She plans to shave her hair, going from about 2 feet in length to a quarter of an inch.
I'd probably be supporting my two uncles who had cancer. I do miss my uncles. I just wish cancer didn't get them.
Okay, you ready?
Igwak heads to the nearest mirror to check out her new look.
Gonna get cold a lot. And I'm glad I did cut my hair.
Victoria Passauer watches as a classmate gets her hair cut and unconsciously runs her fingers through her long, wavy auburn hair. She's planning on donating about a foot of it for Locks of Love, which makes wigs for children. She's supporting Sankwich and her mother, who died from cancer.
Like 5 years ago. So, yeah.
Did your mom also go through chemo and all that treatment?
Mm-mm. So I never got to really, like, do that for her, but it was just a few months, so. But I'm kind of doing it for her, too.
The ponytails are piling up on the table. Corp will mail them to a Locks of Love organization in Florida.
I'm going to shave all my hair off.
David Yvonne's black hair isn't short for a guy. He hasn't cut it in 11 months, and it hangs down to his eyes.
She was one of my favorite teachers here in KLA. She was very helpful and kind and generous, and I hope she gets better soon.
Wow. The oldies girls get their hair cut. Ah. Oh, Deb got her hair cut. Oh my gosh.
Connie Sankwich sits on her couch under a blanket looking at pictures of the school event. At 49, she's lived a healthy lifestyle and never dreamed she'd get cancer.
I cried like a baby when I had to cut my hair. People would say things like, it's just hair. Hair is overrated. It'll grow back, you know. Of course, trying to make me feel better, but it didn't make me feel better. And to see these kids do this and to see all the staff and kids at KLA doing this, cutting their hair for me when they don't have to, you know, I just can't believe the support that they're giving.
In the end, 25 students and staff cut their hair for Sankwich. She'll carry their support with her in the coming months as she travels to Anchorage for chemotherapy. For AK, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week we're heading to Port Hyden, a community of about 100 people on the Alaska Peninsula.
Scott Anderson. I live in Port Hyden. I'm a city mayor, and also I run the environmental program for the tribe here in Port Hyden. It was named Fort Morrow back World War II. The Army come in here And then in, I believe, early 70s, Air Force came in also and turned it into a two-line site for communications on the coast. Well, when I first came here, it was all about the subsistence and hunting and gathering. I just fell in love with it. I started commercial fishing, and I just absolutely fell in love with the land. And anymore, it's turned into so much work that, you know, you find it hard to do the subsisting part. And it's getting scarce. It's getting where there's, you know, the subsistence has really declined since I first came here. Fort Hyden's pretty flat. We got mountains in the background, and we sit right on the Meshick Bay. But so we're really flat right up to the mountains. We sit below Aniakchak. It's a national monument. It's good hiking up in there. I believe it's like 8 miles circumference. It's got Surprise Lake inside it, and pretty good access. We actually do have a few people that come through Port Hyden and travel up into the crater, and then they raft out the other side, up to the Pacific side. So it's pretty cool.
Scott Anderson is mayor of Port Hyden. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your community featured, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Angela Denning-Barnes, Annie Fite, Dave Waldron, and Monica Gogi. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Emily Foreman in Sitka. Lauren Rosenthal was our AK guest host this week. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Kristen Platt. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline is ready to help you succeed in your decision to quit tobacco. Take advantage of proven, successful, free resources. Trained quit coaches will provide support services to help you quit for good with confidential counseling. There's free nicotine replacement therapy and a tailored quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. Public Education Health Trust, formerly NEA Alaska Health Plan, delivers cost-effective health plans for Alaska families. They help Alaska's educational professionals, from school bus drivers to teachers, manage their health plan benefits efficiently. Public Education Health Trust provides members with low-cost plans, more choices, and local control, advocating for 17,000 Alaskans and their health care needs. This message sponsored by Public Education Health Trust.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.